Today on Wings, media women around the world make a velvet revolution.
How are women coping with the challenges that they are facing as they do conflict reporting in a very disturbed world, really? And what is the ecosystem out of which they are reporting? And how are they facing those challenges?
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Hello, I'm Frieda Worden, series producer of Wings, Women's International News Gathering Service. For many years, I've had the pleasure of being a member of the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, which has helped me meet and work with media women from around the world. At a conference in New York, I got to sit down with Nupur Basu, a director from India, who coordinated a joint video production by women in 6 countries. I asked Sarah Newton from Canada to make a radio program for Wings by melding that interview with excerpts from the film.
Journalists, like many other workers, are underpaid and overworked. So they are very vulnerable to corrupt practices. But this is not an excuse for us journalists to engage in corrupt practices. Neither it is an excuse for anybody to kill a journalist.
At a time when the killings of women journalists have been on the rise the world over, women journalists are speaking truth to power. Today on Wings, Nupur Basu, a journalist, documentary filmmaker, and media educator living in India. Nupur discusses her work as executive producer of Velvet Revolution, a long documentary film commissioned by IWRT, the International Association of Women in Radio and Television.
International Association of Women in Radio and Television have been making a long documentary every year for the past 3 years. This is a new project on which they have embarked. So this was their third long documentary. The first one was on climate change and women making a difference. And the second one was on reproductive rights. This one, they proposed a theme, Women Making News. I came on board as an executive producer after pitching for the post. Having done that, I then had to put out a call to other women directors from among the IWRT membership in different countries to come forward with their story pitches to make a film on the subject. I, of course, put out my own vision, which was about looking at women in the media in the here and now. How are women coping with the challenges that they are facing as they do conflict reporting in a very disturbed world, really? And what is the ecosystem out of which they are reporting? And how are they facing those challenges? We had about 18 proposals come in. And out of that, we chose in the beginning 3 of them. Ilang Ilang, a director from Philippines, proposed a film on 2 women journalists, a senior a woman journalist and a much younger woman journalist, and how they are dealing with their profession, how they are doing their job in a dictatorship. The second one was on India, and the director there pitched also 2 stories. And the third one was from Cameroon, where we had a story of a woman in radio and how she goes after the Boko Haram and covers that, which is a major problem in that area. The fourth story I had in mind was about the Bangladeshi blogger whose wife survived him and who now edits the blog that he used to edit, he being Abhijit Roy, who was dramatically slain on the streets of Bangladesh, causing a furore of sorts among free speech people across the world. And his wife now lives in the US, and I sort of sent out my feelers to her, and I really wanted her to speak on this film. Then we sent a filmmaker from Canada to go across to America and film her. So these are the 4 stories that we had from the ground.
In November 2016, Indian journalist Malini Subramaniam received the International Press Freedom Award. One of 4 international journalists to be picked for courageous reporting from a conflict zone by the CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists. India ranks 9th among the 20 deadliest countries in the world to report from. 40 Indian journalists have been killed between 1992 to 2016. Malini reports from Chhattisgarh state on human rights violations on the largely tribal community living there. Chhattisgarh has been the epicenter of a civil war between the state security forces and the Naxalites, an ultra-left group. With 42% forest cover, the state is rich in natural resources. The tribals allege that in the name of development, the state is displacing them from their ancestral land. The tribals, like the journalists reporting on them, are caught between the police, the paramilitary, and the Naxalites. In early February 2016, Malini's home was attacked by a front organization of a right-wing Hindutva group. She was forced to move to another city, another state.
They had formed a kind of a vigilant group. One day they just barred into my house and started asking me questions about who I am, why am I doing this, how long have you been living here? And I was a little surprised because I've been living here for the last 5 years. Then the visits from the police started, where they started asking me details about my stay, about who my landlord is. They had to find a way of building pressure on me to leave. So all that made it difficult for me to live there with my daughter, who was going to a school there. It was so painful to just pull her out of her school in that manner.
The world over, there is an attack on free media. There is an attack on journalists. And India is no exception. It is actually one of the hot spots to report out of, which is strange because, you know, we celebrate India as a democracy. In recent years, we have found that journalists have been increasingly under attack. They have either been killed or they are being jailed. These are not things that bode well for journalism in one of the largest democracies in the world, as we claim we are. It's not a happy time. It's a very challenging time, even in India.
What do these stories have in common?
What's interesting is, and one of the visions that I did pursue, is to try and get stories of women who work in print, in radio, in television, and in the digital media. So I thought, let it be representative of all the worlds of the media where women are practicing their trade. And across media, we find women having the same problems. Women journalists are different from men journalists. Other dangers that women face. That was the question that we raised editorially. And we found that women, danger to them is a notch higher. In fact, they are doubly attacked. They may be attacked in the field because they're in a conflict region, and they may be kidnapped and then raped. So sexual assault is a major problem for women journalists, a major albatross that hangs around their neck every time they go to any of these difficult areas. Then there is the question of being challenged by both state and non-state players. And we find all our characters, whether we are doing a character in Syria or Afghanistan or in India or Philippines or Cameroon, they are being challenged by both these spheres. And then there is censorship. These women are having to contend with all these challenges that are thrown at them.
According to the CPJ, 1,233 journalists have been killed during the last 24 years, 52 journalists every year. War-torn Afghanistan has been one of the country's worst hit. Veteran radio journalist Najiba Ayubi co-founded the Afghan Independent Media Consortium and the Freedom of Expression Initiative. In the post-Taliban years, as a young woman journalist, Najiba drove from province to province, starting radio stations for her group. Some of these were bombed by the Taliban, but Najiba and her team ensured that transmissions were uninterrupted.
One time I remember I was raided by a commander of Kabul police. Policeman fired on a student of school. The head of Kabul police arrived later than our reporter. When he arrived and saw my reporter in the area, said, "Why you are coming before me?" And my reporter said, "That's my job. You come late, but I come on time." And he was not happy with that, and he captured all the journalistic equipment from my colleague. And my colleague called me. After 10 minutes, I received a call from the head of Kabul police. He told me, "Najiba, don't broadcast this news." I said, "No, we broadcast it and we will broadcast more." He threatened me many times, and during his threats, he used some sentence which I never forgot that. He said, "Najiba, please remember you are a woman." It had some very strong threat to me. During the years, I received a lot of threats because of the news that we broadcasted from the radio station, and people were not happy with that. Sometimes was Taliban, sometimes was government, sometimes was police, sometimes was the parliament member.
On Wings, you are listening to a program about the collaborative video documentary Velvet Revolution, commissioned by the International Association of Women in Radio and Television. Nupur Basu was its executive director.
I started my career in print. I worked for one of the leading newspapers in India, which was the Indian Express. It was a multi-edition paper. I stayed very, very loyal to them. I worked for them for 9 years and really honed my trade there. And it was a great atmosphere. It's one of the non-status quo-ist newspapers in India even today. I was very lucky to have been schooled there. And then subsequently, when television opened up in India, the satellite invasion happened and private media came in. I moved to television and I worked for many years with the leading news channel called NDTV, New Delhi Television. And I was with them as a senior editor for many years. Then subsequently, exactly 25th year of my career, I decided it was time to get off the treadmill and be independent. Mm-hmm. And now I'm an independent journalist. I write when I want to. I teach when I want to. I make documentary films. For many years, I really covered a wide range of subjects, from caste conflict, civil rights violations, hunger, poverty, environmental degradation, pollution. I mean, I really went after stories like that. And one of my early films was about the women's struggle against liquor in the villages of India. Because, you know, we have this crazy policy where we don't have one potable drinking water source in a village, but we have 5 liquor shops because the government gets to make money from selling liquor. But what does it do to the people who have little money? Either they have money for food or they have money for liquor. And so if they drink it up, then they're left with no money to eat. And that's really the story of rural India. And therefore, the men were drinking and the women said, "We don't want these liquor shops." And in southern India, in Andhra Pradesh, Karnataka, there were major agitations by the rural women. It was a fantastic grassroots movement. And I made a short film called Dry Days in Dobbagunta. There was initial success because a politician who was under pressure in those particular states, they said, "Okay, we will ban liquor." But then soon after, they turned it around. Alcohol sale in India is a very cynical policy. The government will not talk about it because they stand directly to gain from it. Every state government, when it prepares its treasury budget, they say that we will put out 10,000 crores goes into sale of liquor. That's how they prepare the budget. And after that, it's all about pushing that liquor among the masses, regardless of the social costs of their health. We met women who were 22, 25, with 2-3 children whose husbands had dropped dead because of liver cirrhosis. There were women on my film who said that 75% of the men in the village were alcoholics. Doctors reported the same. If they are drinking 5, those days it was sachets of liquor, it would take away about 50 to 60 rupees, which is really all of what they earned in a day's work as daily wages in the fields. And then they would spend that and then they would come and ask the women, they would snatch their little jewelry, whatever they had from them. Then they would sell the vessels from the house. You know, they would drink, and as they got progressively drunk, the sachets would have a little liquor left. And these little boys would go there and pick it up and start drinking it. And that's when the mothers said, okay, we watched our husbands drink and get liver cirrhosis and die, leaving us widows at such a young age. But we can't sit and wait and see the next generation too die. And that's when they came onto the streets and they burnt liquor shops. It was a fantastic grassroots struggle. But the state used the police, put liquor back in those shops. So I reported that on television and then subsequently made the documentary film.
Indian journalist Nupur Basu, her recent award-winning long documentary called The Velvet Revolution, produced in conjunction with the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, explores the plight of women journalists in conflict zones around the world. Velvet Revolution won the Best Documentary in the feature-length segment at the World Kashmir International Film Festival in July 2017.
Covering conflict often comes with a strong human dimension. BBC's chief international correspondent, Lise Doucet.
There was one time in the early 1990s where the Afghan Mujahideen had scored a very important victory in the east of Afghanistan. I was the BBC Pakistan correspondent then. And they called up the BBC office and said, we've taken Khost and we would like the BBC to cover it. And I said, great, I'll be coming. And they said, we want the BBC, but sorry, no women can come. You know, the commander has said that there's no way. And this was Jalaluddin Haqqani, who now, of course, has passed away, but he's on the terrorism watch list now. So quickly I just said, okay, fine, I'll come, but I'll dress like a man. And they said, okay. So I went and dressed, you know, in the shalwar kameez, and I put my hair up in the hat. But when the moment came for the press conference in the hills of North Waziristan, I'm sitting right next to the commander because, of course, they knew I was a woman and I should be given the place of privilege. And so that's the kind of compromises they make. I got the story, they got the BBC coverage, and actually it was quite a dangerous trip. We got chased by helicopter gunships, but it showed a kind of pragmatism, hospitality over ideology. In the case of Western women, we often said you were treated as a third gender. You weren't treated like the women of their country and culture, but you weren't treated like the men. In some ways, you were rather this curious kind of person that they hadn't come across in their own society. And you were a journalist, but you were also a woman. And my own experience was one of respect and openness. And sometimes, out of sheer curiosity, you would actually get the interview before the man. Sometimes it was an advantage to be a woman rather than a man. The big fear, of course, for journalists is one of kidnapping, especially with groups such as the so-called Islamic State, because their savagery is beyond compare. We do know throughout history that extremist groups have kidnapped people, but the kind of things we've seen now with the videoed beheadings, keeping people in dungeon, treating them like animals, and of course, sexual attacks. But I think women in particular fear this because simply the sexual attacks against women are more predominant than they are against men.
Once we decided to get four stories in from India, Philippines, Bangladesh, and Cameroon, I also decided to embellish it with further interviews with an Afghan woman journalist and with a Syrian woman journalist because I felt that hotspot had not been covered. And then we did this amazing story on Panama Papers. And for the first time, we found that in Panama Papers, there were 300 journalists who had worked on the investigation. And we found that one third of them were women. Now, such a scenario would never have taken place 10 years back. It would have been a nice boys' club. But for the first time, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists ensured that there were a load of women. And the film shows how these women were harassed later by their governments for doing the job of exposing deep-rooted corruption. Marina Walker, deputy director of the ICIJ, based in Washington, D.C., tells us how the women who worked on Panama Papers were harassed.
Statistics reveal that more than war or conflict, it is for reporting on human rights violations, politics, and corruption that journalists are marked and killed. In 2016, 73% of the journalists killed were in this category. Some of the women journalists involved in the Panama Papers investigation paid a high price for speaking truth to power.
These women who worked in the Panama Papers, they live in societies that are incredibly repressive. Let's think about the case of Khadija Ismail in Azerbaijan. Khadija just spent months in a prison for reporting about offshore wealth of the president of her country. Before she was sent to prison, she had to suffer a number of other forms of harassment, including illegally recording in her own house and then making those recordings of her intimate and private life available in the internet as a way to pressure her. There is nothing left for them to try. Khadija remains a shining light in Azerbaijan.
It is quite overwhelming the way people have responded to the film. In New York, I had women come and hug me and burst into tears. It's like they wanted to possess it, you know, they wanted to do something. And they said, we are moved and touched by the lives of these women journalists and the risks they are taking to tell these stories. And one of the things they asked was, what do you want the film to achieve? And I said one thing, I want Velvet Revolution to end up wanting civil society to own us again. Because of corporatization in the media, because of political biases that have emerged in the media, there is a kind of disjunct between civil society and media. In many societies, civil society is saying, oh, the media is all bought over, we don't believe them. But we know that there are n number of journalists out there who do their job without, you know, being compromised in any way. And, you know, we've shown the stories of all these women and we have said, please own us again. Unless you back journalists, unless civil society is with us, how can we do our job? Who will protect us when the government and non-state players attack us for doing our job?
Cordillera is home to three of the largest mining companies in the Philippines. It is being tapped by the national government for both hydroelectric and geothermal power, displacing large numbers of indigenous people. Kimberly Nagabit Quitazol is a journalist who writes for a leading daily, the Philippines Daily Inquirer. She also works with an all-women team for a community newspaper, Nordis.
Nordis is more focused on the take of the grassroots on the issues. For Nordis, we want the wider public to understand why these people are protesting. Because from an outsider, you would say that they are just against development. But if you go to the communities and you really see how these projects would impact their lives, then if you were living in that community, you would understand why they would protest such project. It's like a story that has a template that you just change the name, the number of victims. It comes to a point when you get frustrated that it seems like it's becoming too common. But then, as a journalist, you have to persist in telling these stories. You owe it to these people who have been unjustly killed or unjustly treated.
There's a range of issues that the film covers, which shows the different ecosystems that women journalists are inhabiting. So the Syrian woman journalist says that, I didn't want to become a war correspondent, but the war came to my doorstep. And what could I do? And today she reports from Turkey on her country and what goes on there because she can't go back to Syria. You have the Philippines journalist saying, truth-telling is the business of journalists. How can we do anything else? And that sentence just resonated with me right through the film because that really is our constitution, our Bible. And whatever the truth may be, sometimes it may even be something that doesn't go with our politics, but then we should still tell that truth. And only then will our credibility be restored. competition in the media has disturbed and created fault lines for solidarity among media people. So we are a divided house. So when we are attacked and killed, and the film gives you the numbers, 25 years, 1,200 plus journalists have been killed, which comes to about 52 a year. That's a large number of journalists, because you're a protected species. You're a pampered species, and yet you're being killed with impunity. So who's going to back us if we don't back ourselves, and if civil society doesn't back us?
Over the last two decades, Bangladesh has seen a growing rise in fundamentalism. Writers, journalists, bloggers risk their lives for their stand taken against religious bigotry. Bangladesh ranks 14 among the 20 deadliest countries to report from. In February 2015, Bonia Ahmed and her husband Abhijit Roy visited Dhaka to attend the annual book fair. The trip was the costliest in their lives.
So we walked out of the book fair around 8:30, holding hands. That's actually the last memory I have of Abhijit lying on the street, and I'm asking for help. Abhijit smeared in blood, and I had blood all over. Now I know that I had a sliced off finger. I had 4, 5, 6 inches long machete stabs on my head, and I actually grabbed the machetes with my hand. After everything has happened, all the loss, you know, all the injuries, all of my sleepless nights and the PTSD watch that I have been put in, I still think I am privileged. I have this platform to speak up. Why should I just waste it? I don't know how much impact I'll be able to make. It doesn't really matter as long as I continue to do what I believe in and what I think is right.
Excerpts from Velvet Revolution, a long documentary film commissioned by IWRT, the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, and Frieda Worden's recent interview with executive producer Nupur Basu. Since it was released, Velvet Revolution has been screened in New York, London, Montreal, Manila, Kenya, Oslo, Kathmandu, and dozens of Indian cities. It was presented at the United Nations headquarters in November of 2017 as part of the International Day to End Impunity on Cruelty Against Journalists.
Thanks to Sarah Newton for editing and hosting this program, and to Nupur Basu for her interview and for permission to air excerpts from the documentary. The other contributing producers for the film were Ilang Ilang Kihano, Deepika Sharma, Pochi Tamba Nso, Sidoni Pongmoni, and Eva Brownstein. Find out more about Velvet Revolution on the website iawrt.org under the heading Projects. Wings appreciates your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. To hear Wings shows again, email wings@wings.org or visit the website wingsradio.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.